Hello, everyone, and thank you once again for hitting play on Rock, a Petrospective. I'm David Hall.
And I'm John Schlitt.
And that's right, everyone. That voice that you heard, the melodic tones of the one and only, the lead singer of the band that we all love, John Schlitt. John, thank you so much for joining me today.
David, my pleasure. Thank you for your interest, my friend.
It's been... Petra's had such an amazing ministry over so many years, and your voice has become synonymous with so many great songs and great moments of the band. And it's just a great opportunity to be able to just share with you and speak with you today and hear a little bit of your heart. And I know there are a lot of our listeners will be very excited to hear your journey with Petra and a lot of your memories and your insight into what's happened. But I wanted to start at the very beginning. And we interviewed Bob Hartman the other week, and I asked him the same question as our startup question. And I've heard you give your testimony before. I've heard other interviews where you've shared your testimony. But just how did you come to know the Lord? How did God become the Lord of your life?
Well, I was in a secular band called Head East here in the U.S. We had a pretty successful first record, and it allowed me to tour all over the country with major tours. Make a long story short, I had the musician's dream for about 5-6 years. But with that, even a dream can become very boring if it happens day after day after day after day. And so you look for that next exciting event that happens in that next day. And I'm afraid that drugs and alcohol became my way of getting things more exciting. And it just about destroyed me. In fact, I got fired from that band in 1980 because I was more messed up on cocaine and booze than they were. And that's hard to do. Went on for another 6 months trying to create a new band called the Johnny Band. And it was really just an excuse to stay totally drunk or coked up 24 hours a day for about 6 months. And a lot of people say, you can't do that and live. Well, you can if you've been doing it for the last 2 years pretty much straight. But at the end, August 28th of 2080, we had an anniversary party planned, and as usual, I got totally plowed, but thought I'd get some Coke to sober up, and couldn't get the Coke and passed out and didn't make my anniversary party. The next morning, I woke up on the couch in a living room, which had never happened before, and my one-year-old son was looking at me going, why are you here, Dad? You know, you could tell the look, he wasn't talking yet. And a little voice goes, you know, you're worth more dead than alive. And at that time, it totally made sense to me. So I sat in my chair in the living room with my five-year-old daughter and my one-year-old son, and trying to figure out how to end my life the best way. I wasn't going to use a gun because I didn't want to make a mess for my kids. So as I was sitting there trying to figure out the best combination of pills that would be as quick and painless as possible, my wife taps me on the shoulder and says, John, you promised you'd come talk to my pastor tonight. This same 6 month period that I was going down the tubes, my wife got saved. Mm-hmm. And she was bugging me about Jesus. And I would get so mad because everyone knows you can't have fun if you're a Christian. So, you know, that typical attitude of a non-Christian who doesn't have any idea what it's like. But I looked there and I said, when did I do that? She says, last night when you're really drunk. So I said, you know what? All right, I'll go to this pastor's house with the total attitude that nothing was going to change. And I wanted her to remember that I tried. So I went to this pastor's house, and to make a long story short, I went in with an attitude and came out with the Holy Spirit, and my life changed from then on.
It's amazing. That's awesome.
You don't understand. What is even more amazing is my cocaine habit after the church prayed for me, I mean, days later, it was gone. And for anyone that's ever dealt with that knows that's a miracle in itself. And the miracles just started from then on. And when I say miracles, I mean, the lifestyle that Christ wanted for me entailed taking care of my family, realizing they're the treasures that I've always been seeking, and being a godly person that walks the best he can, even though he failed, but he knows Christ is there. And in turn, that after about 5 years, I'm sitting on my couch with my wife and thinking, well, I've got, my kids are going to Christian school. I've got a great church. I've got a full-time job now, which was absolutely a miracle after having 7 years of nothing but being a quote rock star. I actually got a real job and had it for years. And I had my first new home, actually a home that I rebuilt. And I said to myself, this must be, in quote, the American dream. And all of a sudden a voice goes, you know, John, that's not it. This is not it. This is not it for you. And I told my wife, I said, I feel like God just said to me, this isn't it. And I explained the whole thoughts I was going through. And she says, what do you think it is? I said, I have no idea. Because music was gone for me. I mean, I hadn't sang for 5 years. And I thought it was totally gone. I was a mining construction engineer at the time, had been for 3 or 4 years. And I just, you know, I graduated from the University of Illinois as a civil engineer, ended up working in mining development. And I thought that was it, you know, and the idea of ever singing again was just totally out of the question. Although my wife had said many times, God is not a God of waste, John. And you really are good at what you do. I says, well, yeah, but babe, it cost me too much. And I just can't believe God would ever want me to do this again. But lo and behold, about 3 months later, Bob Hartman, who by this time I'm a gigantic fan of Petras, because somebody had given me a Petra record, said, this band sounds just like your old band, but Christian. I said, yeah, right. And because I'd stopped listening to music. I tried to listen to Christian music, and there's some good stuff out there, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. I couldn't handle it. So I said, you know what? I just won't listen to music ever again. And they played a Petra record for me and go, oh my gosh, this is how rock should be. This is what you should do. But I figured it was too late for me, because I'd used my voice in such a negative way in secular rock that there's no way God could ever use me, you know, typical, I know God's plan type of thing as a baby Christian. And all of a sudden Bob calls, says, again, no, long story short, would you consider singing for Petra? And I said, you gotta be kidding me. And he says, I said, yeah, let's do it. He goes, well, don't you think you should pray about it? I'm going, But I knew, I mean, not only that first time with my wife, but there, I'd had some people praying over me and prophesying, and it, God had really prepared me, probably more than he'd prepared Petra. But in January, started rehearsing. February 3rd, first show, live show I did was in Brisbane, Australia.
That's it.
February 3rd, birthday.
That's it. Down here, I was very aware that your first concert was down here in Australia, and we talked about that when we reviewed both the Captured in Time and Space album and moving into Back to the Street on our podcast. We obviously talked about your joining the band and our awareness of you having toured Australia. That your first concert was in Australia. And I'll come back to that in just a moment, but. You've shared a little bit about how hearing Petra for yourself was, this is what rock music is, and it sort of awakened something in you, but that Christian music can be enjoyable. I was wondering obviously you've been involved in music from a young age. What was it that you enjoyed listening to as a young person And what was sort of some of those early influences on your enjoyment of music in general?
Oh, from the time I was, from the time I was in kindergarten, I could sing. And was I going to make a living out of it? Absolutely not. But a friend of mine decided he wanted to learn how to play guitar. And I said, well, if you're going to, I'm going to do that too. And so we put together a band after we learned three chords and we started a band, which wasn't bad. I had to sing because nobody else would. And I realized that as time went on, I could, you know, and the music that I really was excited about was the singing groups. But rock to me is a very exciting music form. And one of the reasons why I thought Petra was so amazing was they took a music form that I loved, that I knew was exciting, and they were singing about the most exciting subject in the history of mankind. To me, that just totally made sense. And it just woke me up going, this is what it's about. And so as I got more of the Petra records by that, I'm going, this is, and they had a fantastic singer. Greg was an amazing singer. Their structure was totally what I was used to in my Head East days. Great musicians, great singing, great songs. So they were my cup of tea. I mean, I didn't have any other Christian, I could care less about any other Christian band because to me, Petra was it. Mm. And for them to call me, it was like, okay, God, I'm there. All right. I see the plan, you know? And really if you think about it, for 7 years, I learned how to be a front man for a rock band in my secular days. And then for 5 years, I got into the word heavy duty and had to develop my walk. And then all of a sudden Bob calls and said, okay, John, would you consider? And that's when all of a sudden, bam, 12 years of study ready for this job. And that's how I saw it. I saw God saying, this time was coming, you're prepared. And I felt I was. And a lot of times say, well, how's it feel to feel the shoes of Greg? I said, I got my own shoes. Greg got his, I got mine. We're going to do just fine. And I just felt very, very blessed that God would give me another chance. And he did. I played every place in the U.S. I played with Head East. I played with Petra in front of bigger crowds.
Oh, wow. That's so amazing.
And I was able to give a whole different message than I did with the old band.
And one of the things I love the most about God, and I hope our listeners always take it to heart, is God's redemptive qualities. God places gifts in us. God has things that work in us before, whether we've been a Christian, like grown up in the church and known God our whole life, or whether we've come to faith at a later time. God has put things within us that he wants to develop and use. And even if they haven't been used the way he intended initially, God always redeems his creation, his work to bring his glory to pass. And I just think that's an amazing story to be able to see the way God prepared you for both, because it's your journey, and I have my own life, but my understanding of God to move out when you've just become a Christian, if you'd had the opportunity to be a front man, be a lead singer of a Christian band just after you become a Christian, I'm sure the temptation and the struggles that you journeyed through over the previous years might have been very difficult to not go back to, but that time of focusing on God and letting God work and mold you and develop you really prepared you for what he had in store.
I truly believe that. Yes. The front man for a band like Petra had to have depth. He couldn't be a baby Christian because he'd put his foot in his mouth every time he started talking. Out of pure excitement. And I mean, not that I didn't put my foot in my mouth a couple times anyway, but you know, I had some amazing teachers. Bob was all the guys in the band were great friends that took me under their wings and made sure that it was quite a challenge. I mean, not only do you walk on stage and have something that you want to say through music and what you and through explaining the songs, you still have to confront even Christians that are blackballing you and calling you every name under the sun. And you have to have that strength knowing, no, this is what you're supposed to do. You're doing this to God, not for them. Just keep walking the walk and be faithful and keep strong.
Yeah. I've heard, before we start really looking at your time with Petrol, I've heard you share in an interview before that after coming to the Lord, but before joining Petra, there was a moment of time when you tried to, or you were asked to sing at church or something. I've heard a story of you tried to sing at church, or you were singing at church and it wasn't received very well, or it didn't quite go over. Well, what happened there?
The pastor was a sweetheart. I mean, he said, you know what, John, you need to get up there and sing. I said, Pastor, I don't think so. I just don't think, I really don't think I want. No, you need to. So I went up and I sang, you know, a couple of the Christian songs with tracks, and I sang them my way. And he comes up afterwards and says, you know, John, you did a real good job, but, you know, I think maybe the church isn't ready for you yet. And I said, I told you. And I just knew, I knew it. It wasn't that I was being too aggressive. Well, I might've been, I don't know. I was just being me. And it said, you know, John, I see your heart. I know you're giving it all your all, but I just don't know if the church is ready for you. I said, thank you, Pastor. Never ask me again.
it's great how God just has the right timing. It might not have been ready just then, but he had you on that journey.
I met well. I tried my best, you know, and just it didn't quite work out. So, but I could have told, no, I don't think ready yet. Trust me.
well, you were clearly ready for. At the time Bob called, as you've shared, and God had you on that journey. And as you said, your first tour was Australia. Your first sort of ties in with the band, you were essentially completing the Beat the System tour that Petra mm-hmm. had been on. I know there was a tour of Australia, and I think there were some European dates that needed to be finished off. What was that like? Your tour of Australia, those first few concerts with the band, both in Australia and Europe. But what was that experience like for you? What was it like getting back into being a part of a band and doing that those concerts in the early days?
I think the best way to explain it is for everyone that was at the concerts, the first tour of Australia, I want to apologize to you now. I was super excited. I didn't have working. A singer needs to work with his sound men, both the front and the monitors. And we didn't know each other yet. And I have to be able to hear a certain way. And on top of that, I was super excited. Hadn't sang in front of people sober in 7 years. So I got excited, and after about the first three songs, I blew my throat out and I sounded like a frog the rest of the evening, and it got worse and worse. I think we did 6 shows in Australia, and I remember going, well, this is probably the last 6 shows I'll do. The guys are going to fire me when I get back. I understand, because I deserve it. And God bless them. They were very generous and understand. They couldn't figure out, John, in rehearsal, you stop. What is going on? I don't know. And it took me a while to finally realize that I was just too excited and just oversang. And but seriously, I am serious about all you that heard was at the first Petra concert with me. I apologize. I hope I was able to make it up to you as we came back and did the This Means War tour and the Beyond Belief tour. By that time, I had more control again. It was my people then. And I think I was able to deliver a pretty decent show.
Well, I'm sure you were. I'll obviously talk more about this in a few minutes, but I wasn't at the Beat the System tour. I was still a bit young then, but my first introduction to Christian music outside of my, I grew up in a Christian family. My dad's a pastor. I've grown up in the church, and my parents had a lot of Christian music playing in the house, very old school worship music, Graham Kendrick, all that sort of stuff. And when I was just entering the youth group of our church, was This Means War. And the first Christian album I ever heard was This Means War, and it had such an impact on my life. And we'll talk about that shortly. But I just wanted to, when you shared before about how hearing that album had such an impact on you, that this is what it was like. That was what it was like for me when I heard you and this and the bands on This Means War album. It just brought it awoke something in me. It spoke to me the type of music I liked, and hearing the message the way I wanted it. So you're not the only one who's had that journey. So after you finish those final few concerts of the Beat the System album, you guys hit the studios and record Back to the Street. So this is your first recording experience with the band. What was that like, getting into the recording studio with the boys and recording an album that was going to be your first set of songs, not singing Greg's catalog, right, but here's the songs that are going to become synonymous with you?
It was scary. I'll tell you what, the first 2 years of Petra was very trying, because first of all, they had to deal with the new singer who had to get his chops back. Then we had new producers. Bob was bound determined he wanted to go back to rock and roll and not do this like the Beat the System thing where it was all techno. I think Bob probably told you, tell you he didn't like it that much?
Yes, he was.
I didn't want to speak too, but he was not happy with that direction. He got John and Dino Afonte, who were rockers from the word go. He knew that I was a rocker, and that was very cool. So between the three of us, the sound that he was looking for, I think he got. And it was real natural for me, because it was that's where I sort of leaned towards, you know. John was my sort of private producer, John Alfonte. Dino sort of took care of Bob, and John took care of me, and then they both took care of everybody else. And John was a taskmaster, man. I hadn't sang for 5 years in the studio. And he and I both knew that I wasn't in shape. So we just had to make my throat bleed every song we did, because that was the only way. When I listen to these songs later on in my life, I want to know that it was up to the category I wanted to be. So to do that first record, it was Back the Street was a challenge. And we really worked it hard, because, as you said, it was going to be the first example of the new band. And praise God for Don't Let Your Heart Be Hardened. No, I Have a Thankful Heart.
Thankful Heart.
And praise God for that. And Fool's Gold and Back the Street. These were all great songs, and it was so different from Beat the System that everybody goes, I like this. This is good. You either liked it or you either hated it or loved it. And praise God, there were more people that loved it than hated it. And as time went on, the people that hated it started to go, yeah, maybe I like this after all. Okay. And so it was quite the challenge. Those first 2 years, I'm sure Bob said the same thing, were ups and downs, and really trying to convince the world that Petra wasn't dead yet. And meanwhile, we were just getting back on our feet, you know, just starting to get the momentum happening again and starting to develop as a band. It takes many shows for five guys to finally start feeling natural and know, sort of subconsciously know what the next guy is going to do for each song. And that album was a challenge, yeah.
I'm obviously not a professional musician. I played in church bands over the years. I play guitar not very well. I'm just a bit of a rhythm guitarist. But I have had the opportunity to be in a recording studio on one occasion. But I was just wondering, for those of us that don't have experience, not just for Back to the Street, but just in general, when Petra got into the recording studio, how did that process work? Like, was each member going in and just doing their little bit, maybe not seeing each other for a few days, or was everyone in there together working it through? How does the recording process work for Petra?
All the above. Probably leaning more towards individuals going in at separate times. You go in and you do the basic track, which is the drums, bass, and either guitar or keyboard, just for reference. And then you work on the drums. You make sure they're perfect. Then if the bass has any lines that need to be changed, you go back in and change that. And then that's the foundation. And then you go in, you start adding guitars, you add keyboards. I like it where most of all the instruments are already in there, and I can feed off of the energy that I'm starting to hear. And that's always how we did it. That's how I did it in the old band. That's how I did it with Petra, and Petra liked it that way. So we would go in, and sometimes we didn't do background vocals before I did leads, but most of the time it went bass, guitar, drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, other guitars, lead vocal, background vocals, and then go back in and maybe add, you know, cymbal and snares kind of things, just icing. Guitar, keyboard player would go back and play. Johnny could play anything, so he'd go back and do stuff that nobody else could do on top of everything else nobody else could do. And so and then Bob would probably go in, and it was cool to watch those guys work. They're just all so good that it was like, it was just a treat. And I would, I'll be honest, I'm not a real studio guy. So I'd go in and do my thing. And I'd probably, if I was blessed enough to be there while they were doing other stuff, it's great. Or I'd just go back home and wait till the song was finished and go, oh my gosh, it's great. And just, you know, it was that kind of thing. You build it because you trusted everybody. I mean, on my solo stuff, it was a totally different ballgame. I went, on my solo stuff, my first two records, especially my second record, I had all the musicians go in and play in the studio at the same time, like it was a live concert. That's the feel I wanted there. And so that was a whole new experience for me. So I had all the instruments there at the same time. And if anybody made a mistake, which was probably not going to happen, but if anybody did, or they didn't like what they did, they can go back and change it. But then I went in and did my lead and did a lot of the background vocals. Mm. So each band, each situation, each group of musicians are different.
Yeah. This means War and On Fire. Bob's talked about how Bob spoke to me about how he was able to start writing specifically for your voice. He was able to really start to write. The songs were able to reflect this new Petra at the time, and your voice was really able to be highlighted in a different way, and it really felt it took the sound of the band in a, as you were saying, you're trying to head in a new direction and trying to lay this thing, and those two albums really feel like they really started to capture your voice. You were sounding, you know, it was written to match your style and your range, which was amazing. How did you find that experience? How did you find it when songs were being written to suit your range, as opposed to you're trying to meet what were being done previously with the songs that Greg designed? Obviously, this would also reflect in concerts when you're doing a lot more of songs that have been written for you. How did you find that as a singer yourself? How was that sort of experience?
I loved it. It was fantastic. And on top of that, This Means War, the song, and Fired Up or On Fire, both those albums were amazing rock albums. I mean, they had energy. The album cover itself on This Means War, oh my gosh, it said it all. To me, This Means War is one of the most complete Christian evangelistic rock albums that had ever been written. From the album cover to the songs to the title cut to the every song was just ridiculous. And I finally was in tune, you know, I mean, I was in shape. I've been singing almost every night for 2 years. My voice was back in shape. They didn't have to worry about that. We could start, you know, really testing it and doing stuff that was not iffy on Back the Street, but we knew it was going to be a lot of work. A lot of stuff was just natural now, and I could be more the professional I wanted to be. And then On Fire, oh my gosh, when This Means War came out, after it was done, we're going, oh my gosh, how are you going to follow that? How are we going to follow that? And Fire, oh my God. Oh, I told you that I went with my throat bleeding. We were touring so much with This Means War, almost didn't have time to do On Fire, but On Fire had to be better than This Means War. So I'm touring, flying to California, getting no sleep, going to the studio all day, getting back on a plane and flying to our next show. I mean, I sang 14 days in a row, live and studio at the same time. At the end of it, my voice, I seriously think it was bleeding. And so I remember the last song we did was just before I had to go fly to Chicago to do the big festival there. I can't even think what it is now. That had to do with the Jesus people. Anyway, I had to do, I think, On Fire. And the scream on Fire was either that or Minefield.
Minefield has the big scream right at the beginning.
And I never felt like I was, every time I went to the studio, I felt like I was already shot, you know? And so I said, no, leave the scream. And it got to a point where that was all that was left. And I mean, I was worn out. And John Alfonso, you can do it, John. Stop being a wimp. You can do it. Come on. And I'm going, yeah, John, that's easy. You've been sitting back there and doing nothing. I've been working. And I mean, I can't hardly talk. And he goes, oh, are you really a singer? And it just made me mad. And I went in and I just bellowed out, saying, I know I'm not going to be able to talk for the next 3 days. When I get to Chicago, it's going to be embarrassing, but I'll show him who's a singer. And I bellowed out this blood-curdling scream. And he goes, there you go. That's it. And I walk in, that's great for you. I've got to sing in 6 hours. Tell me how I'm going to do that. And I went to Chicago, and I'm serious. It was the weirdest thing. I went to do sound check. I couldn't even talk. And I said, that's how it is. The record was more important than the show, but this is my, went up on stage, the beginning of the show, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, my voice just straightened out. I had one of the best shows I've had. I mean, I could sing anything. And I'm walking up to God, thank you. I don't know why you did, but thank you. It was like, but getting back, you asked me about the two albums. Amazing albums. I loved both of them. They were exactly what they needed to be.
My first experience of Petra Live was the On Fire tour in Australia. I as I shared, I was a little bit young for the Beat the System tour. And I Beat the System, Back to the Street were pretty tight. This Means War, I just joined our church youth group, and my mum and dad were a bit, the night that the concert was on, it was going to be a bit late. David, you can't go. I'm really sorry. I was devastated. But the following year when you guys came out for On Fire, that was my first experience of a live album. And I remember, I've got memories etched in my head of that concert. Of that concert, I know you guys tour all over the place, but I remembered vividly prior to Minefield, all the lights dropped and there was the sort of machine gun sounds and bombs exploding and all that. And then you come in with that amazing scream, wail, however you want it, what do you want to call it? But it set such a stage. And when we were reviewing the album, we sort of compared. That's almost a signature for you, the way back when Bob and Greg recorded Chameleon, and Greg has this this squeal and scream at the beginning of Chameleon. And we've sort of compared how it sort of really almost be the new circle that this was you putting your mark on the direction of how the band was going. But it was I just have so many great memories of that concert, and I really appreciated what you guys brought. And I was very lucky because that was the last tour of Australia until Farewell, and we'll get to that. We unfortunately didn't get any tours during Beyond Belief and all that. That was unfortunately due to the recession down here in Australia, and the guys that were promoting the concerts, their company went out of business and they weren't able to continue. But Bob has shared that sort of time period, This Means War, On Fire. Bob has shared how, when I was talking with Bob, he sort of talked about how in the early years of the band, there was a lot of negative reaction from the church, a lot of pushback. He even talked of the story of a church praying against Petra, which was so sad and horrible to hear. You come into the band at a time when there is starting to be a shift. I know that the shift is probably more around the time of On Fire and Beyond Belief when Josh McDowell was touring with you, but you had the opportunity of coming in and being a part of a time when Petra was more accepted than it was in the early days. What was that like for you, like coming in, the acceptance of the church, that rock and roll music was not of the devil anymore, that it was an accepted way to reach people? How was that for you? What were your experiences with how the band was received?
I praise God that the enemy wasn't using the church anymore. That's how I looked at it. I got to experience a lot of the negative stuff too. I still do. I mean, you get the old question, how can you say that rock and roll is of God? You know, how can we play that evil rock music and say it's Christian? And I don't answer it anymore because I don't care what they think. I care about what God thinks. So I went through that, but yes, I was very blessed to be part of the band when it was a Josh McDowell tour, which lasted for three albums, I think. And then Petra Praise One came along and that just opened up people started going, wow, these guys actually do care about the Lord, don't they? Listen what they're doing. And the church started using that kind of music that we had developed. And I was excited that the enemy couldn't use that anymore. That's how I saw it. I mean, we went on stage, we did our thing. We used the music to bring across the message that changed lives. And we got to do the altar call. We got to watch kids, people's lives change right there that night. And that's all I cared about. I didn't care who was praying against us, who was doing this, who was doing that, because it was folly. They were wasting their time. Mm-hmm. They felt they were doing right because that's what they were taught. Great, let them go do it and let them waste their time. And then and we will do exactly what we're supposed to do the best we know how. And it was a thrill. I remember one time Bob and I were at a music, an old music theater, and where the dressing room's upstairs. We were looking outside over the parking lot, and it was a big parking lot. The whole parking lot was absolutely full of church buses. And I came from a different perspective. I came from the secular side of things and the Christian side of things. So I sort of took big crowds for granted. But Bob looked out those windows and says, oh my gosh, look at all those church buses. He looks at me and says, John, the church is accepting us. And I looked at him and says, yeah, I guess you're right. And what's funny is it didn't mean that much to me at the time, because the battle, I figure, was always there. But Bob was like totally blessed because he'd gone through this kind of this accusation a whole lot longer than I had.
Mm. Yeah. It's amazing. And you referenced Petra Praise then. Obviously, Petra Praise was very different. Bob talked about the battles, even just to convince the new record label, that, hey, we wanted to do this. What was it like for you doing an album and a tour following that, which was a worship, which had this worship focus? you know, it especially, I guess, when I think back to your story about how the pastor responded when you sung in church. And so how is it for you doing these worship songs on stage? Was it a different experience? Was there a different feeling compared to what, I mean, the other songs are not worship. I mean, worship is bringing our heart before the Lord, but was doing these songs that had their foundation in the church and that people would have heard, but with the Petra feel to it. How was that experience and that tour for you?
Well, I always felt that the Petra Praise album was dedicated to kids. I always felt that our music style was more zeroed into kids, the younger generation. We were trying to do music that they would relate to, that they could enjoy, and in turn get the message that was being broadcast or that was being brought out in those songs. Kids that would never go to church in the first place. Now, Petra Praise was one of those things that was trying to help the church for the kids that did go to church but wouldn't sing a note in church. So Petra Praise was sort of here's how it could sound. Do you want to do it this way? And so we still had songs from our past records, you know, from that were still part of the set. So it was almost like strengthening the fact that praise and worship can still be cool. And so we'd have songs that were the top notch of songs from Beyond Belief I guess it was On Fire, This Means War. And then we'd have Petra Praise One, and they would all mix together and you'd go, oh my gosh, as you pointed out, these are praise and worship songs, whether they're rock and roll or not. This is so cool. And so we just tried to really honor the spirit of the praise and worship, but not forget that kids were there to have an adventure, an excitement. And so we were able to bring praise and worship into a form of excitement before that was sort of heard of. You know, praise and worship is an excitement, it's church. Well, we wanted to bring praise and worship into a mode that's exciting to kids. And I think that was our biggest challenge for that. And the record, I mean, it stands on its own. I personally think it's the first record I ever heard that I felt was anointed from the first song to the last.
Mm. We, one of the things I really, one of the impactful things about Petra Praise, like you said, I was a young person. I mean, it was released, I think, around about 1989, I think it was. And I was only 14. I was still early high school. For me, again, it was that here's songs that we do in church and songs that I can sing to in the style that I like. And it had that impact on me. It got a lot of play in my house with myself and my brother. We were sharing this. And when we did our podcast of Petra Praise, I actually looked at where the praise genre in Christian music sort of went, because the modern music industry and the Christian music circle these days really seems to be church praise and worship albums. We get a lot of releases, you know, the Bethels and the, you know, Hillsong and all that. That's the big genre. And here's Petra in 1989 doing a breakthrough, doing something that had never been done before. And even looking at what happened, came after it, even bands like Delirious, who had a very much a praise and worship heart to them because they came out of a church basis when they formed in the UK. Their albums weren't released until 1996-97. So your album is 6 or 7 years. Petra Praise was 6 or 7 years ahead of a time when bands like Delirious and then Third Day did their Offerings album, and you know, Michael W. Smith does his worship albums and all that. But it's, you know, nearly 10 years ahead of its time, ushering in something that had never been done at that point, and it had a major impact.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, David. I appreciate saying that.
I think it laid a foundation. I actually believe that what you guys did, and we've explored this journey in Petra in general, have laid, broken a lot of ground spiritually in the spiritual realms to usher in. You know, like Petra, one of those first rock bands, and they broke a lot of ground there. And then we moved into the mid to late 80s, where you had bands like White Hart and Stryper and all that start to become prominent. Then you guys have broken that ground with the spiritual thing. That spiritual foundation was laid because of the heart of the band. One of the things I felt when I saw you live on the On Fire tour was you'd started doing some of the worship. You were laying the foundation for the Petrol Praise album because you did I Will Call Upon the Lord, which I loved live. I love that. I was in the side that was working with you that night, and we won. I'm certain we won the around bit. But We Exalted, those songs were starting to become a part of the set even at that point. But one of the things I really felt and noticed, songs like that, songs like I Am Available, there are songs that when you were singing, it really looked like you almost switched off the audience and were just, you were just tuned in with God. It was, you were just bringing your heart to God and yep. and taking it to that realm.
Praise God that it showed. Praise God. How dare I, as a singer, not those kind of songs, it's to him. And if people want to join along, that's fine. But those songs gave me an opportunity, first of all, to thank him for where I was at the time. I was standing on stage in a foreign land in front of thousands of people, playing a music style that I loved, singing to the Lord who gave me a second chance. How can it not be personal? Absolutely. And I'm glad, I'm very glad you said that. Thank you. That makes my night, trust me. Or in your case, that makes my day.
and I think that's what I was sharing before. I guess that to me is the heart. While Petra Praise was a praise and worship album in that this was sort of a style of song that was done in church, I've always got the impression that everything Petra ever did was worship, because Bob was bringing his gifts to the Lord and lifting up, you'll bring your voice. John was bringing his keys and Louis the drum. Like it was a worship offering. It was always, is that like the heart of the band was the worship offering to God?
Absolutely. In fact, we were five of the major, very unusual characters, all right? And we weren't perfect by any means. And sometimes we hated each other all during the day and were ticked off because somebody woke him up before he should have been woke up and all that kind of, it's the typical brothers on the battlefront of life. But before we walked on stage, every time we would say, Lord, forgive us for our sins today. Please let us walk out there as clean vessels. We give this to you. We ask that we stay out of the way and let your will be done 100%. And that's what we did. Yeah, I'm serious. We could be about ready to punch out each other. But boy, when we walked on stage, we knew why we were there.
Yeah. I guess that actually leads into a question I've got here on my list. Sort of, you spoke about, I mean, the band was very stable during this time period. I know Ronnie Cates had joined the band between This Man Drawing on Fire, but we've got this period of many years where you had yourself, Bob, John Lowry, Ronnie Cates and Louis touring everywhere, very stable for so long. You've talked about there are times it could get tense between. What was it like being around each other so much? What was it like traveling together, sharing those journeys together, and how did you guys navigate the ups and downs? And you shared obviously just then one of those ways was the praying beforehand, but share a little bit about what it is like touring with the same guys for so many years and being together so much and having to, you know, deal with each other.
Well, anyone that lives in a family that's got more than five people in it has experienced exactly what I did. And that, look what we did in Petra. We were family. We get mad at each other, but we'd be, you know, anyone would be the first one to come to the other's rescue. We loved each other. We were family. We saw God work in such amazing ways that no one is ever going to be able to share what we were able to share. And that really brings you together quick. Now, granted, as time went on, there were changes, and we, you know, there were personnel changes and stuff. And part of that was, in Bob's case, he wanted to leave and help raise his son. And other cases, it was they weren't happy with the leadership at the time, and, you know, they could do better doing this and that. But they're still family, and it's almost like a brother going, you know, I've had enough of you. I'm going to go out and do my own thing. But they're still brothers. I mean, right now, I mean, we get a chance to every once in a while, the five you mentioned, get back together for certain benefits or you know, big shows that talk about the past and all that. And we get together. It's a ball. It's a lot of fun. Would we ever all get together again and do a tour? I don't think so. But it's fun to see everybody and play maybe one or two songs and that kind of thing. It's their family. I love seeing them every time I see them.
Beyond belief, this amazing, successful album. Most of the people who are listening to this podcast are long-term Petra fans, and most Petra fans hold it as the gold standard. Like, it sort of all came together for what is considered the greatest Petra album of all time. But linked with that, you also had the Beyond Belief movie and some great clips. I was just wondering, just maybe a couple of your memories of the Beyond Belief album, the Beyond Belief the video clips that were being recorded, tied in with that in the movie. Just share some stories from that album.
Oh, that was a trip. We had just come. I mean, we were at our peak. It's almost like we could do no wrong. Like I said, the church really believed in us, and we weren't fighting them anymore. We were trying our best to be as useful to the church and to our audience as possible. Beyond Belief album was just the next album, you know. It followed Petra Praise One, yeah. I think.
Yes.
And so we'd had a little bit of time between On Fire and Beyond Belief, and we had the Josh McDowell thing. So we'd really learned a lot. We'd been all over the world like two or three times, and Bob was rested, and his writing came through. I mean, he had a whole lot on his, ready to fire up. And every time he came up with a new song, I was like, dang, buddy, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I'd sing it, and then we'd go in and present it to the producers, and it'd be the next song, and the next song, the next song. All of a sudden, we got 10 songs, and we listened to it going, wow, this is a pretty good record. And I let one of my friends, actually one of the band friends, who was a pretty major critic, and I played it for him, played Beyond Belief in my home, and he listened to it and goes, John, this is a great album. And I, you know, we've been around it for, what, 2-3 months, so to me it was like, well, yeah, it's another Petra record. No, this is a great album. And I said, well, okay, if you say so, then cool, great, because I've heard people say that about all the other albums. But when it came out and the first two songs came out and we went number one on every chart that existed in Christian music, including Billboard, I mean, you name it, we were number one either with Love, or no, it was Love or Prayer, and I don't even know what the other song was, but the rock song. But the two of them together, we went number one on every label, and there was like seven of them at the time, which had never been done and will never have happened again. And we're going, wow, this is sort of cool. And then it just skyrocketed. And when the video, because the record was doing so well, the record comes in, okay, maybe we'll do a couple of videos. We said, no, we don't want to do a couple. We want to do six, but we don't want to do videos. We want to do a movie. It's more useful. It's more efficient. We probably can almost make a movie as efficiently as we can six videos. So let's do a movie. and it has a message with it. It has more depth, and the videos will just be sort of added icing to it. And of course, I'd never done that before. And so the record company, well, here's a budget, but not. And so we had to go in, and we had a great manager at the time, and he just worked his tail off to just beg, borrow, and steal, and just do a movie for 1/10 the budget of what any other person could have done. And it was fun. I mean, we had what, 5 different locations in 5 different parts of the United States. went on a sunken island that didn't know that it would sink. So we bring Louis' brand new drums on it, but we're doing the video, waiting for a helicopter to come over. And all of a sudden I'm watching the island sort of disappear, going, you know, I think this island was bigger in the beginning of the show, of the song. And somebody goes, oh yeah, it's a sunken island. I go, what do you mean? He says, oh, it disappears in about another 3 hours. And Louis has this look on his face like, what? And so we had to, basically the water had already crossed over what, so we had to wade in water with drums over our heads. there was quite the trips there. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You've obviously shared, like you said, there was a lot of success in this time period. And I'm interested to know for you personally, and I asked this question of Bob as well, when it's very easy for, maybe not the right way to say it because I'm not in the industry, but the perception is it can be very easy when a band achieves success like that for members of the band to perhaps lose their focus on God and maybe be distracted by other things that are going on in life, or you know, the fame and success brings temptation into life. How did you keep your walk fresh with God throughout this time period? How were you able to keep your foundation fixed on God? What sort of practical steps were you taking while you're out on the road and while this success was garnering to keep yourself grounded with God and not be, you know, sort of led out by what success and fame brings?
Well, if in my case, I can only speak for myself. I'd gone through all that garbage in the Head East days, and I saw what it got me. God, I was close to death. I got a second chance with Petra, and God gave me a second chance, and I didn't take it for granted. And I always realized that Petra was really anointed and was really given a special opportunity to be a tool of Christ. And everything else just seemed pretty trite to me. You know, all the quote glamour and all that. And I'll be honest, I don't know if I was ever satisfied with the crowd size, because it wasn't as big as some of our secular counterparts. And I always wanted Petra to be the bigger than that. So Christian kids could say, my band is doing better than your band. It was competition. So was I ever satisfied with our accomplishments? Not necessarily. I just thought they were another tool, another key that can open up another door to do what we're supposed to do. But for instance, when we got our Grammys, you know, what's it feel like to get the Grammy? Well, it's a great tool. It's a great key to get on MTV in Canada and talk about our music and talk about our faith. And that's cool. But I've got 4 of them sitting here right next to me in my little trophy case. That and a dollar will buy me a half a cup of coffee at McDonald's, you know. So, but it was a great tool, and it really legitimized Petra in the world's eyes, and that's a tool also. Dove Awards legitimized us a little bit in the Christian world, not as much as the Grammys did, but still, you know, all the accolades and all the I appreciate the hearts that gave it, but was it a big mind, you know, was it the accomplishment of my life? Nah, My accomplishment. I live each day to try to accomplish being a Christ-like person. And most of the time I fail. So, you know, the challenge is always there, buddy, you know. And I just pray that in our peaks that we did our best and maximized the time and the opportunities the best we could. Were we perfect? No. I mean, did we have attitudes? Yeah, we strutted. We strutted, but it's hard not to when you walk in and people are, you know, going nuts, but you get in your dressing room and go, okay, what are we doing tonight? Well, we got this song. Yeah, okay, now why are we doing it? How many people are going to get saved? You know, that was always a major question, you know. It was a different mindset. And my mindset when I was in the secular world was totally different than my mindset in the Christian.
In the On Fire album, there's a song called First Love. And I guess what I'm wondering is the journeys in this time period, how did you keep that first love, that fire going for God? The first thing I do in the morning is I'm into the word, or did you have a focus? How did you keep your personal walk with God tight and close during all these tours and all this time period?
Oh, there were times when I blew it, and then I'd have to sing the song, and then all of a sudden I'm going, oh boy, what am I in this for? I mean, you're always going to question yourself. If you don't, you're not human. And you're lying to yourself, because like you said, the temptations are always there, and we're human and we're frail and we're not perfect. That's why the blood of Christ had to be shed for us, because we're never going to be perfect. I just appreciate Christ. I mean, he gave me a second chance. He saved my family. He never stops being a blessing. He never stops caring. Even when I blow it, I have to be reminded. So do I get in the word in the morning? Yeah, sometimes. Do I not? Sometimes. But again, when I walked on stage with Petrus, especially, I probably am closer to Christ than I am any other time in my life. Mm-hmm. I miss it. I'll be honest. I miss not being that close to Christ sometimes, because I'm not torn as much. And I'm not with the band, with the big, you know. But I will tell you, even with my solo career with Trax, I walk on stage, I'm close to him, because I'm singing to him.
That's awesome. You shared earlier how you wrote one song. Just Reach Out appears on the Wake Up Call album. And I was just wondering, had songwriting been a big part of your life before, even though you hadn't had songs put onto a Petra album? How much of did you enjoy writing songs? Was it something that you've been doing regularly, or was Just Reach Out sort of something that happened in a unique set of circumstances?
Well, I was starting to feel the idea of writing my own ideas, you know, what God was putting on my heart. I'd been doing, when we weren't touring, I was going out with Petra tracks and playing in places where they couldn't afford Petra, but they could afford me with tracks. And I would go out and I'd start, you know, I'd sing the songs and talk about them, what they meant and all this. And I was realizing, hey, I've got some stuff to say. And that's what fostered my solo projects. But I think that Just Reach Out was before I did that. And that was one of those things where I had a friend there were friends of my wife and I. They came over to have supper with us. And he was one of those guys carry guitars all the time. Just always had an acoustic guitar. He says, John, listen to this idea. He said, I'm going, oh, I don't want to write. Just no, because I wasn't that much of a writer. I was a front man. I delivered the music. When I recorded, I gave it my 100% to try to translate what the writer wanted to say. And then live, I was the one who had to make sure people understood that there was a band up there, whether it was a good night or a bad night, and we needed to be heard. And that was the lead singer's job. So I concentrated so much on that, and I had such great writers and producers and stuff. You know, you sit down and try to be a producer helper, that just makes the producer mad. You try to tell a guitar player how to play. Oh, that's the last thing you're going to do. And so I just stayed out of the way. I just knew that my job was to make sure as lead singer, I was the best I could possibly be because the band deserved it. But as time went on, I started getting into that. And when the guy played the song, I'm going, oh my gosh, that's really a cool hook. And he had I think he had the first verse, and go, that's beautiful. And then we wrote the chorus. And then the second verse, just, the song was written in an hour and a half.
Wow.
And I said, this is anointed. I had to fight to get it on the record though. I mean, because we had so many other writers, a song for the singer. No way. And God bless the record company because they wanted it. And that was, I got to have that one song on a Petra record, and I was very happy about it. And like I said, so many other songs are so great, I didn't need to. Yeah. So then about that time, I had my own solo records, and I was able to concentrate on those. And now people know what I'm thinking and how I write. And it's different from Bob, of course, because I didn't want to ever be like, I didn't want my solo stuff to be another Petra thing. So I tried to lean in different directions, but keep Christ first.
Well, you've raised your solo projects. Shake and Unfit for Swine sort of came out around this time period. I know, I think Wake Up Call was about 1993 and Shake was released in 1995. So we're in this time period. How did the solo project come about? What was it that sort of led you to do this on your own? I know that the credits in the album, guys like Ronnie Cates and Jim Cooper, who was a part of the band at this point, were that they've got some credits in the songwriting side of it. But how did the solo projects come about for you?
Well, Shake again was my first one, and it was songs that, like I said, I've been doing solo tour, and I've been coming up with ideas, and I've been starting to write and starting to work with musicians, including Ronnie and Jim. And they would write music. I would take the music, and from that music, I would get word ideas. And that's how we started writing together there. Then I started working with the producers, and I went to a totally different camp as far as musicians, producers, than Petra's camp. Dan Huff, amazing musicians and amazing writers. And so, 'cause I wanted to come in from a totally different mindset than Petra's. And so, but I did co-write with some of the guys in the band. Notice I didn't co-write with Bob. I didn't co-write with Johnny because they were busy writing for Petra. And I didn't feel like it was fair. Actually, Ronnie was writing for Petra. All four of them actually did, but they weren't writing as much. So they wanted to write with me. I don't think the other two did. So I'm okay with that. Just to be truthful, I could care less about my solo stuff. So good. But it worked out well. And I was very pleased with Shake. It actually was pretty successful for a first solo project. And then the second one came out, Unfit for Swine. And that was the one where I said, I'm going to try something totally different. Because Shake was compared with Petra a little too much. It was, it sounds like a Petra record, but with John's writing and all that, I'm going, well, that's not really what, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to take the momentum of Petra. I wanted to create my own. So Unfit came out, and I wanted to do something totally different. And that's when I had all the groups play at one time. I did all the writing, I think there might've been one or two, but I think I did most of the word writing. I'll be honest, I don't know. There might have been one or two people that did something. I don't know. But I know that I really concentrated on writing on that record a lot more, trying to stay away from the Petra style, which was a kiss of death, I find out later, because the Petra fans didn't like it because it didn't sound like Petra. And the non-Petra fans knew I was part of Petra, so they weren't going to listen to it anyway. So it was one of those disasters that later on was appreciated. Because I have more people talking about that record now than Shake, and Shake is phenomenal, I think. But then I had a period of years where I was taking over the Petra responsibility of the live show, and I had to put my solo career totally on hold. So it sort of disappeared for many years.
Well, I want to encourage you right now. I mean, I love both the albums. I got them when they first came out. I will acknowledge, you know, I loved Shake because it did have that Petra sound to it, and there are some great songs on it. I mean, I've just got the CD sitting here next to me at the moment. The Road to Calvary is just such a powerful song, and I love that song. Thank you. And then when Unfit for Swine came out, it was noticeably different, and I quite enjoy it just as much, if not probably more than Shake. It probably gets more playtime on my song listening than Shake ever does. So
David, you and I could be best friends, I'm telling you right now.
And I'm not just saying this because it is a truth. I actually the song God Is Too Big I run a few times a week for exercise, and I have a Christian music playlist that gets a lot of cycling. God Is Too Big was on that. It was one of the first songs that went on. I really enjoy that song. Just because the heart is so...
Let me tell you a story about that song, okay? That was the first single. It was the only single that came out, God Is Too Big. And the record company, I'm thinking, oh, great, this is a good record. This is a good song. And so the record company puts it out, and all of a sudden I get a call from my record company rep. Says, John, we got a problem. I said, what? He says, radio stations are calling and getting complaints about your song. I said, why? He says, have they heard that? Listen to it? No, they think you're singing God Is Stupid. And I said, well, tell them I'm not. Just listen to the song. And sure enough, they took it went. It shot up and shot down, and the whole record was just, after that, it got blackballed and just sort of, don't touch it. It's one of those records, don't touch it. And it's funny you mentioned God Is Too Big. I do that when I have a solo show. I do that song just because I'm doing that song the rest of my life just to show them. And it's funny.
Another song that I really like off that album is We Worship You. Such a beautiful heart to it. I my brother and I have spoken, it's one of those songs I would love to be able to sing that. I can see that being sung in a church environment, like a church congregation, bringing that heart, because that's what it is. We worship you, and it's just an amazing song, and I really enjoy that one. So, your solo albums have had a great impact as well. Around this time, and you just shared a moment ago, around this time is when Bob made a choice to step away from touring, and he shared with us about the family reasons for that. But you said it sort of puts you in a different role with the band. Mm-hmm. Two questions for you here. What was it like for you coming to terms with Bob making the decision that he did? And then what was it like for you having to take on this new role with the touring side of things, that leadership role you were just talking about?
I was scared and honored. The fact that the lead singer, the founder, was going to quit, how can you keep a band going with that? It was a challenge, but I knew that Petra wasn't over. So I said, okay, I'm honored that Bob thinks I can take care of it now. And so I went forward. It was a responsibility that was given to me, and I wanted to make sure that Petra didn't skip a beat. Now, I don't know what I was thinking at the time, but because it was a lot harder than I thought it'd be. But I made a lot of mistakes, thought with my heart rather than my head, made a bunch of big financial mistakes, just, I it was one of, to Bob quit at a perfect time. We were just, our momentum was starting to go down. Other bands were, you know, really starting to shoot up there. And we had been so blessed for so many generations. We had been a big band for four generations, basically. And this next generation had their own people, you know, and we were still in there doing our thing. And, but I was watching the momentum slow, and that's hard. That's hard to do. It's, and so it was a struggle. It was a struggle. I was honored to do it. I was honored to keep the name Petra as legitimate as a Christian rock band can be. But it was, it took a lot. Those 7 years were not some of my favorite years.
At this time period, just as all this is happening, you're sort of juggling the solo career, the solo projects, Shaken and Unfit for Swine, and, you know, sort of Petra are all sort of happening at the same time. No Doubt, the following on No Doubt Tour, the Petra Praise 2 album, all those things are all in that same time period. How did you juggle the two? I want to say careers. It's not the same. I know it's all one thing. It's all one heart, journey. But
I consider it two different careers. Yeah, I consider the same focus, but two different. I wanted to keep them two separate. Hmm. I just said, okay. I realized that Petra was, for me now, was 24 hours every day, 7 days a week. So the solo thing had to be shelved. Now every once in a while, I would go out and do a solo date, and then I would do my solo, you know, my solo songs from the two albums, and do Beyond Belief and Don't Let Your Heart Be Hardened, you know, something, because I'm the lead singer for Petra. I can't just ignore that, you know. But those 7 years, that's why you never heard anything from those records that much. You know, it just, they just were, I shelved them as far as my commitment towards them, and knew that it would be, I realized then that now that I'm in a position that I'm at now, where I'm a lot more responsibility for Petra, and I knew that wasn't going to change, that until Petra was retired, I wouldn't, my solo career was pretty much on hold.
It wasn't just Bob that left in this time frame. Not, you know, sort of, we sort of had a lot of changes in the band at this time. John Lowry had left, Jimmy Cooper had taken over, and then he seemed to finish up as well. Ronnie moved on. There's a lot of turnover. Guys like Lonnie Chapin and Pete Order and Kevin Brando will become a part of Petra. How did those guys become a part of the band? How did they sort of come into your zone, into your awareness? Yeah.
Well, it's a long story. Okay, Ronnie decided to quit at the end of the No Doubt tour. And the guy, I think one of the guys in the band knew Lonnie Chapin. I think Lonnie had been hanging out. We did a tour with Whiteheart. Lonnie was hanging out with the younger guys in my band, and said, he's a really cool guy, man. You should do, he's a great bass player. But, well, okay, I'll try him out. So we tried. When Lonnie quit, we brought in Lonnie, and he was a real blessing. He was very exciting, looked good. Was a great bass player and not a bad singer. So it was a good replacement for Ronnie. Then we finished, we were right at the end of the No Doubt tour, and David Lischens was not working out at all, not at all. So about this time I was doing the Unfit for Swine tour. I actually did an Unfit for Swine tour, and Kevin and Pete were part of that band, and they were amazing, and they weren't afraid to, you know, live in a camper, and I mean, they were just happy to be on the road. It was such a fresh feeling, because Petra was so used to being, you know, on tour buses, and that's not a good enough bus, this kind of stuff. It just got to a point where nobody was happy anymore, and so I was going to fire Dave Alishan anyway. And I realized that David was just not happy. Not David, my keyboard player.
Jimmy Cooper.
Jim wasn't happy. And so I said, you two guys must leave. Kevin and Pete came in. So that's how that band formed, that developed. And so Louie and I had these three new kids that were so energetic that it changed my style. Because before, I was running around. I never used a mic stand. I always had a mic in my hand because I ran all over the stage. Well, I tried that the first couple of nights with those guys, and I got a mouthful of guitar neck probably three times. And I said, okay. So I got the mic stand, put it in the front, and stayed there and let the young guys run all over the place and be the exciting factor. And it worked out. It worked out. They were fresh. That was a fresh new band that certainly represented Petra in an exciting way.
You did two albums with those guys. We had God Fixation and we had Double Take. What was, two questions for you. What was it like, or how was it different recording with these guys compared to what you've been experiencing with Bob and John Lowry and Ronnie? And I guess, and the second question for Double Take, what brought about the idea of re-recording some of these classic Petra songs with the new band?
Okay, for me, recording with the younger guys, the different guys, wasn't much different. See, we did Petra Praise too, and we actually had a studio band play half the songs and the live band play half the songs. That way we used two studios, got done half the time. And it, for me, I just sang, and it was always going to be good. Petra's stuff has always been good, so I never had to worry about that. When God Fixation came in, Bob wanted to try a new sound. He wanted to try a different style of music, which put my guys in a zone that I think, in a roundabout way, limited them a little bit. The live spirit that they had was sort of toned down into this popish rock sound that Bob wanted to do. And it wasn't something that I was that excited about. But they did a great job in the band, and it sounded great. The record is one of the biggest selling records in India. And different parts of the world, they love that record. Different parts of the world, they love Beyond Belief. It's just a different sound. And when I did tours in India, it was fun to go and sing those songs, which I never sing anywhere else. And it was fun to watch them do God, to just get into God Fixation and the Pear song, and it was fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Now, to answer your second question about why did we do Double Take? Well, we had always felt that the Petra stuff that was played in church was always the slow stuff. Churches would never touch the rock stuff. The rock stuff was appreciated live. And a lot of times that's why the kids came to the cult, was because of the rock stuff. But the churches were always scared to play it. But the rock stuff had amazing messages in it as much as the mellow stuff. So we said, you know what? We knew it was the last record on this label. We knew their problem, it wouldn't be a lot of support for it. We were going to do a live record, and they didn't want that. So we said, okay, let's do something that's, again, unique, that nobody else has done. And so we took our rock stuff and mellowed it down to what maybe a church could play. And they could hear the message of this means war. I mean, my guy said message. He came, he saw, he conquered. Give me a break. You know, it's Beyond Belief. All these songs were just really had messages. And so we were hoping possibly that the church would gravitate to it, and it would get played in places that our stuff had never gotten played before. I don't know if it worked or not. It wasn't very well received by the record company. And so, but it's another arrow in our quiver that I'm very proud of. Love listening to it. I really do. The arrangements are totally pro. There's nothing amateur in any Petra record we've ever done. You get into a Petra, you know, if you get into a Petra mindset, you're never disappointed. And because I'm part of it, I don't do it very often, but I'll tell you, you know, when I'm on Spotify or something like that in the car, and I may go, oh, okay, let's do Petra. And man, songs I haven't heard in 25 years, that's a great song. When we do that, you know, it's that kind of stuff. But Devil's Take was totally unique and was not well received by the record company, and in turn wasn't really pushed that much.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit like Bob there. What when did we do that song? And Bob has comments. What album is that?
All people. The boy has written 200 amazing songs for him to go, did I write that?
As I shared earlier, for various reasons, Petra, I wasn't able to see Petra for many years, and I never got to see this version of Petra live. I have had the opportunity there are some recordings of concerts out on YouTube, and I've had the opportunity to view them on YouTube. And obviously, as you shared, it's a different feel and a different sound. One of the things that popped up, there's one live concert from around the time of Double Take, because Pete Auter sings he did one of the songs off the Double Take album. It's the name of it slipped me, but he was performing it live in the concert, so I know that was around the time of the album and the energy. But one of the things that sort of stood out to me was one of the songs you were singing and you forgot the words, and you actually commented during the song, here we go again, John Schlitt forgets the words to a song. with this vast majority of songs, was that something that can be hard to, I mean, I don't know what it's like as a professional performer.
No, there are singers that actually know the words to all the songs, and there's singers that think they know all the words of the songs. And if I am well known for being a singer who has to mess up at least one song a night. And part of it is I get so used to a song. I do a lot of songs. Even back then I was doing, oh my gosh, I was doing my solo stuff. I was doing Petra stuff. I was doing, you know, it just, but anyway, I take them for granted. I think after singing them so many times, I just don't think about them anymore. And it just comes out natural. But there is a cue that sparks the spot that has to come. And probably what happened was somebody didn't play the cue or something happened and there was no cue and I didn't know what it was. That's my excuse and I'm sticking with it.
Sounds good. I asked this question of Bob as well, and I'd really like to ask it of you, because you've already shared that you and your, I believe your wife's Dora, is that correct?
Dorla.
You and Dorla have been married long before you joined Petra and became a band. You already shared at the beginning in your testimony, your son and your daughter have been there this whole journey as well. How did you juggle time with family, with touring with Petra and your solo projects as well? How do you juggle the time for the family? How do you keep that priority of the family high, and how do you help them not feel left out, neglected? How do you keep your family together through all this?
Well, after the 5 years between Head East and Petra, where I was doing a regular job as an engineer, I was working my tail off to get sort of caught up. You know, I'd been a quote a rock star for 5, 6, 7 years. And so when I went into the working world, I really wanted to work hard to get caught up to what I'd missed in the 7 years of being a singer. So although I was working a regular job and put 9 to 5, well, my 9 to 5 was about 6 to 7, you know, and I'm just a driven kind of guy. And so I didn't see my family that much even then, but I was home every night. Yes, that was very true. Was I happy? I was trying my best to be. It was what I thought God wanted me to do. So I was being as happy as I possibly could be. Did it feel wrong? I don't know if it did or not. But anyway, when Petra came along and the opportunity came along, it was like, this totally makes sense. And the guys came up to talk to my family before they ever said, hey, this is going to work. And asked my wife, you know, can you support this? And she knew it was of God. So she said, absolutely. This is his calling. Absolutely. And my kids just thought at school I was going to be a rock singer. So, you know, it's just kids, what can you say? But when I joined Petra, Petra's philosophy is God, family, job. And so we may have gone on tour for, say, 10 days, but then we were home for 2 weeks. Mm. Gone out for a week, then we're home for 4 days. It was never, our kind of touring was totally foreign to what I was used to in the secular world, where you go on a tour and you're gone for months. And that's one of the reasons why I went into drinking and drugging, because I was gone. I felt guilty about being gone so much. So the Petra thing was a totally different ballgame. My wife knew that I was anointed for it. And so it's always been, this is my calling, or this is our calling. And that's been a very peaceful. Now, if you get my kids in the right time in a grumpy mood, and they want to, you know, use an excuse to bring me down, well, you were never at my ball games, or you were, you know, and then later goes, we didn't really care, Dad, the ball games weren't that great anyway, you know, but our family, I think we've had a very tight family, and it's because we've put God first and family second and job third.
And it's a great, that's the philosophy I think we all need to have, no matter whether we are, you know, working a regular 9-to-5 job in a ministry role or in a public setting. I think that's that, you know, that needs to be the priority. And I remember the first time I met Bob, I was just about to, I'll get onto this tour in a moment, but you guys toured Australia again when Farewell was released, and I had the opportunity to meet you guys because you did sort of the sit down and the meet greets and the signing stuff, and I took the opportunity to ask Bob. I was just about to start my first. I was just about to embark into a youth ministry role, youth pastor of a church, which I did that for about 8 years, and I asked Bob what was his sort of advice for someone about to enter into a ministry role, and that was exactly what he said: God first, then family, then the job. Like, it was always that, and it's such a you know, perfect way to keep it in mind. We've had this time when there's been a lot of changes and different guys, and then we come to revival. And Bob is back in the band. Bob sort of shared how, when I interviewed Bob, he said, you came to him and said, oh, the guitarist has left, the guys have left, I need a guitarist. And Bob said, what about me? From your perspective, like this sort of moving in for Bob coming back in the band, how did that come about from your view? And what was it like to have Bob back in that role?
It was great. I loved it. It felt more like Petra. When Bob got back in the band, it felt more like Petra than it had since he left. I mean, you know, when Bob left, we had, like you said, Johnny had left before. So we had three of the five members of the original. But John and Bob leaving, that was a major cut for me. I always saw them as two of the most talented guys I'd ever been on stage with. And I missed them. Although, all the other guys were really pretty good too. I mean, there was never really that much lack of a Petra show live. But when Bob came back in, it almost felt a little like relief, because he wasn't going to come in and work for me. He wanted to come in as a partner. which meant he could take half the hassle now too, which was fine with me. So, all right, buddy, you come in 50-50, fine. Now you get half the hassle, and I'll be glad to share it with you. So, but it was a fun thing. I enjoyed it, loved. You know what? That album, that was a learning curve for a new record company. Mm-hmm. They thought they knew it all, and us old timers don't know nothing. And so they come in and say, we're going to take it. We're going to pick the song. We're going to pick the producers. And you guys just go in and do, you just play. I said, okay, sounds good. You're the record company. Great. And it wasn't a bad record. In fact, the Revival, oh, that song.
It's a great album.
Oh, I just love that song. Was fun to sing. And so, but it was a smaller label. It wasn't that well supported. We didn't get to tour it that much. And I don't think Bob was touring with it yet. I don't think Bob was touring. I think Bob came in to play on the record, but we still didn't, he wasn't live yet. He wasn't playing. Bob came in on Jekyll and Hyde when there wasn't anybody left but me and the bass player. And he said, I said, well, Bob, let's start the record, but I want you to know that we've got two people in the band now. So I got to find a guitar player and a drummer. So let's make it a good record. And so he loved Jekyll and Hyde, because what happened was the record company goes, well, Revival was good, but it didn't do too well. So why don't you do what you always do? And I'm looking at Bob going, duh. And so Bob went in and just started rocking. I mean, just he wrote all the songs, just rocked your socks off with all of them. Beautiful songs, of course. Jekyll and Hyde is probably one of the favorite songs of all of our rockers. And I mean, even now, doesn't matter, you know, beyond Minefield, This Means War, Jekyll and Hyde's right there with it. It's so funny, because by that time our momentum was so far down that, and the label was so small, that Jekyll and Hyde, the record, was a great record. And
it was a great one. It's a fantastic album.
Thank you. But it never got no airplay, because there was no record company support. And by that time, Petra just wasn't cool. We were too old. We're too old to be cool in the secular music business. And so about this time, we finish it, and Bob is loving the record. He's loving the guitar parts. He's loving everything about it. And he says, John, what would you think about me coming back in the band? And that's when I thought, oh, good. He can help me put this thing back together. Oh, good. And I said, yeah, but he says, you're not going to work for me. Because see, my job, I own the live portion. Mm-hmm. And I says, I joked, I said, oh, so you're going to work for me? He says, no. He says, we'll be partners. I said, all right, buddy, sounds good. And that was a fun time, from Jekyll and Hyde and Farewell. Those, when we finally got our band of Bob, me, Greg Bailey, and then
Paul Simmons was touring. Paul Simmons. Farewell.
Oh man, that was a Jekyll and Hyde band, and that was a really good band.
Yeah.
Even though it was a three piece, Bob would do stuff with his guitar that we could even do. Prayer, which was a total keyboard album or song. No, Creed. Total keyboard song. And we were still able to do Creed with just a guitar, bass, and drums. It was fun.
It's an awesome, I mean, that time period, Jekyll and Hyde is one of my favorites. I know, I guess the Australian in me likes the fact you've talked about working with Impop. The Australian in me likes the fact that Impop was Peter Furler and yes. From the Newsboys. And
yeah.
I know that with the recording. Peter Furler was involved quite heavily, both playing the drums and in the production.
With Jekyll and Hyde, yes.
Yeah, and Phil Joel was involved as well. Yeah. So, you know, from an Aussie point of view, I quite, you know, Newsboys are up there as one of the other bands I quite like, yeah. But not to the standard of Petra, but it sort of has that, almost has that sort of one of those super band feels that he's sort of the best of Petra and the best of Newsboys coming together.
Oh, yeah.
And
Pete was an amazing drummer. Pete did all the drumming for, because we didn't have a drummer at the time.
Mm.
Pete did all the drummer. He was a producer and should be, because he had fresh, that guy is a natural. The only thing Pete did that I was unhappy with was Bob did a bunch of leads, and it wasn't cool to have leads in the music at the time. And he chopped off some great leads. And when I heard the record, I'm going, Bob, where's all your leads? He said, well, Pete says they're not cool right now. I said, oh, you got to be kidding me. So, but Pete's a good guy. I like Pete a lot. I like the Newsboys and Petra get along very well. We enjoy each other, and they're fun.
Yeah.
They're fun.
So, as you alluded, Farewell is sort of, we have the live album. We finally have John Schlitt live on album, which many of us fans were long in waiting. And tied in with that is this concept that the band had decided, I guess you and Bob had decided, that it was time to maybe not work full time. I know the band has continued and still performs from time to time, but there was this decision that, hey, Petra's time seemingly had been time to draw a conclusion to that. How did that decision come about?
Well, what did Bob say?
I don't remember. I can't remember offhand. I think.
Oh, you're going to compare notes later. Oh man, that's not fair. Well, I tell you what, the Farewell album was, it goes way back with the Jekyll and Hyde album. We went out, and with that band and with that music, we went out and played all over the world as much as we could. And we tried to present that album and that this new band in every spot we could, hoping that it would get interest back with the industry, basically. Not with our fans, but with the industry. And at the end of that year, we waited and waited and realized that nobody was going to play us. Nobody was going to hire us for festivals or any shows or any tours. And around February, meanwhile, I've got this real itch to start doing my solo thing again, and knew that I really appreciated Petra's ministry, and I was always sort of guarded on it. And I wasn't happy the way Petra was being treated by the industry. And I wanted it to end. I was tired of how the industry was ignoring Petra. Basically, it just didn't feel right. And so I was talking to my wife about it and saying, you know, I think Petra's over. We really need to just call it quits. And Bob calls me out of the blue and says, John, Petra's done. And I said, what do you mean? Because he told me the exact same thing I just told you. And I said, well, I agree, Bob. I think it should be over. He said, well, we've got two shows in June. We could probably cancel those and just stop. And I said, whatever you want to do, buddy. It's your band, whatever you want to do. And I hung up and I thought, well, hold it. One of the reasons why our shows have really sort of dwindled is because we play every year. And it's almost to a point of, hey, Petra's play. Well, it's okay. They play every year, so we'll go and see them next year. So I said, you know what? There are people that I think if we had one more show, they'd want to come and see it. I said, let's do a Farewell tour and make the announcement that we're retiring at the end of this year. And he said, yeah, I think that'd be worth it. I said, yeah, I think it would. I think it'd be a good idea. And he said, well, you know, we got one more record to do with Impop. And I said, well, tell them we'll do a live record. And they weren't that happy about it, I don't think, but it was the only thing that made sense. And when it finally came out, I think they really understood this was a good idea. And so we got to get, you know, we got the band that we still had the Jekyll and Hyde band, which was great, and put together this set that we did live. And that show was the beginning of our tour. So it was, we brought Johnny in, we brought Greg in, and to make it sort of special. But a lot of songs we hadn't played that much yet. So it got a whole lot better as time went on. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. I think that tour was fun because we probably signed and talked to people longer than we did any show any night. Mm-hmm. We'd do a long show, and afterwards we were probably there longer than the show, just signing autographs and talking to people. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole purpose of that tour. Didn't matter what country we're in, it all came the same. They were able to say, thank you, Petra. You were this part of my life or that part of my life. It was cool.
And that's where the circle came back to Australia, because it was the farewell tour where you guys came and played at the Australian Gospel Music Festival in Queensland, Australia. One concert. That's all we had. I traveled 12 and a half hours from my home, went up. My wife's family lived not far from there, so I dropped my wife, who was pregnant with our firstborn at the time, dropped her there. My brother and I drove to the festival. We arrived, bought tickets for the festival just to see Petra, and left up. And we lined up, and we met you guys, and we sat in that line. I remember it clearly. And we left after it. We didn't stay for anything else. We came just to see Petra. So it was a big thing for us down Australia, because you hadn't been down here since On Fire. And, right. You know, that's, you know, 15, nearly 20 years for an Australian who came to know the band for This Means We're On Fire. And there was all these years where I wasn't able to see. So it was a great opportunity. I loved that that concert. It was a great experience. And and I was so appreciative. Like you said, you guys hung around. There was this long line of fans, and you guys just chatted and answered questions and took pictures. And I can't screen share. I'm not very good at screen sharing, but I've got my own pictures of your concert and of me meeting you guys. They sit as my backdrops on my computer and all that. So I was very grateful that opportunity came about, that I had that chance to see you guys live one more time. Was just a great time, and it was a fantastic time. Easter weekend, really sort of a very special experience, and really enjoyed that. So yeah,
that really pleased me. That's what we wanted. We wanted y'all that wanted to talk with us and just be part of it one more time. And that's what we saw. I mean, that was the whole tour, like I said, probably one of the best tours we ever did as far as relations with people. It was fun. Yeah. We had grandfathers come up with their grandkids. And one grandfather, still I remember it, said, I want to apologize to you guys right now. He says, I wouldn't let my son come and see you because I thought you were from hell. And then I heard one of your records finally. Mm-hmm. And he says, this is my grandson. I wanted to make sure he heard you guys before you stopped. Mm-hmm. And I am sorry. That's awesome. We look at him and go, sir, thank you. Wow. Mm-hmm. You couldn't say anything nicer.
Yeah. After Petra sort of concludes that era of their ministry, you have the opportunity to explore your solo career a bit more again. And we got The Grafting and we got The Greater Cause. And I find them to be two very, very different albums. What, I guess, can you maybe share a little bit? I know we've been chatting for a while, but can you share a little bit about how these two albums came about for you? How you were, you know, sort of the foundation of mm-hmm. those albums?
Okay, very simple. The Grafting was after the Petra had stopped. It'd been for, oh my gosh, 6-7 months I'd done nothing. Then Bob came and said, hey, let's do a Two Guys from Petra, do some Petra you know, some praise and worship the way we'd like to hear it. And let's go do some acoustic stuff. And we did that for about a year. And meanwhile, I was thinking, you know, I think I need to start doing my solo thing again. But I'll be honest, I could not get into it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know a subject matter. I didn't know that because so much had gone on, so many changes. I was sort of floundering. And I had a producer, my son-in-law, who's an amazing producer. So that wasn't a problem. We worked out a deal, but I never started it because I didn't know what to write. And so I was coming home from a solo show and on the airplane, and I was praying to God, what can I write about? What? He says, what's important to you? And at this, I was family. There you go. That's your subject matter, family. And so even then, I would go in and I'd talk with Dan, and we'd bring in co-writers, and I realized I was doing nothing. I was just in their way. I said, Dan, tell you what, these are the subjects I want to talk about. These are some I want to sing about. I'm not in writing mode. You guys do it. And I think I wrote part of one song on that whole record, but I also gave directions on what I wanted on that record. And because my son-in-law took charge of it and was very honoring of what I was looking for, it turned out to be an album I could not do without. The grafting, you know, basically about my grandkids, the fact that adoption is amazing. You just couldn't. And then there's, it's been so long, I can't remember all the songs, but I know that every one of them was a more family-oriented, from the heart thing I had to talk about at the time. Was it a rock record? Not necessarily, no. In fact, it's probably the most non-rock record I've done since God Fixation. I know we'd argue about that, but still, it was not a rock record. And it surprised people because it was the first solo record since the two that I did, you know, years ago. And I think people are going, oh, John's just lost it. He's not the rocker he used to be. Okay, well, I guess maybe he's mellowing out. And I was okay with that because it was what I was supposed to sing about at that time. And the shows I were doing were smaller shows. They were more intimate. The songs made sense in that kind of atmosphere a whole lot better. And then when I started hearing people say, you know, I really would like to have a rock record. I'd really like to have a rock record, John. Next one you do, we do a rock record. I said, okay, all right, I'm in the mood now. So the next one came out,
The Great Accord,
Greater Cause, that stomped.
Mm.
That stomped, and we brought in guitar players that weren't afraid to play guitar. That was fun. That Dan did that one too. And I said, Dan, I want a rock record. I want you bring in the best guitar players we got. You bring in, I want rock. And he plays. He's a drummer, and his drumming is ridiculous. So he just stomped, and it's one of my best records. And I'll tell you what, it was that same kind of thing as On Fire with Petra. I was afraid. I didn't know what I was going to do after following that record. My next record, my newest one, is Go. Mm. And that record, it's like Fired Up was to This Means War. Mm. This Go is as it was to The Greater Cause. Mm. So I got right now, and that's not mentioning my Christmas record. So
we'll get there. Yeah,
two regular records I've done are rock records. Mm. And if you like that kind of feel from Petra, you will like these two records. These are I should ask you, have you heard these records?
I have. I felt like I said, it was different. I felt a real acoustic feel to it. A little bit of a softer feel. It's actually an album. My wife is a singer, sings in our church, and she's never really been a big rock, hard rock music person. But I played The Grafting for her, and she really enjoyed that album, and she quite liked hearing that. She said, it's very different. That sounds like the singer from Petra. I said, it is. It's John Clutch, guys, but it sounds so different. I said, it is. It was very different. And then The Greater Cause was a real, real hit back. But I was listening to – I quite enjoy Go. I've been listening to Go. I was actually listening to it yesterday. I really enjoy look, I'm sure there's a story behind Fake News. I was listening to it yesterday, Fake News. The time period, I mean, Go was released last year, and I know Fake News is the big thing of the Donald Trump presidency era, and that sort of term came about. Mm-hmm. Tell me how the song Fake News came about.
Well, first of all, that's one of my favorite songs. I've become a little political, and nobody wants to hear that, but I'm a little political. And I wrote a song called Faith and Freedom off of The Greater Cause.
On The Greater Cause, yep.
Yeah, and that was the beginning of that. I was already worried about my country and the fact that Christ is being phased out of it quickly. And I feel the only reason why we have been as blessed as we are is because Christ was the center. He was the buffer for decisions made by either liberals or conservatives. He was a buffer. I won't get into that, but I'm afraid that Christ is quickly being phased out of our country totally. And it worries me to a great extent. And here in this country, our news media has turned from giving us information to giving us their opinions. And it is very jaded, very, very opinionated, and it disgusts me. So Donald came up with the term fake news. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. And John and I were writing a song. He wrote the music for it. And there was a part where it had to have a certain thing to it. And I was trying, and all of a sudden Fake News came in. I'm going, oh, that's perfect. And then the rest of the song just folded right up. But you'll notice the first verse is about politics. Yeah. But the second verse is about the phonies in the church.
Yes.
The evangelists, you know, telling us everything is hunky dory. God's going to make you rich. This kind of thing. I wanted to make sure, first of all, it's a Christian song. Mm. I didn't want it totally political, although I will tell you that I understand it comes across that way, but I wanted to make sure that as a Christian artist, which I am and will always be, I wanted to bring the fact that fake news is basically lying, and it can, and that's it, just another name for lying. Mm-hmm. And that's how, but it was very, if you go to YouTube, you'll see a video on it that was done by a friend of mine for that song. So it's a fun song. I mean, mm-hmm. Some people hate it. Some people love it. And some people, praise God, don't know exist yet. So what can I say?
It is a great song. I quite enjoy it.
Thank you. You
mentioned that you also did, you had your Christmas album in there. In 2013, you released a Christmas album in there. For me, hearing you sing, now it's my heart. I can't believe it. Oh Holy Night. Hearing you sing Oh Holy Night and just letting your vocal range just take that song is just, it's just such an amazing thing to hear. It really brings that song to life. What was sort of your experiences doing the Christmas album? Obviously wanting to just bring a bit of your heart for that celebration.
I've always wanted to do a Christmas album, always. Bob never wanted to. And because of that, Petra never did. And I just feel Christmas to me, I've got my Christmas tree up right now. I put it up on Halloween just to show, just to show Satan, you know, how much I don't like him. Mm. So it's a beautiful time. I wanted to have a album that would represent the music that I love, done in a respectful way, respecting the Christmas spirit, but doing it the way I'd like to hear it. You know, it doesn't get played in a lot of elevators, but it's a album that you can listen to and say, like this, I yeah. like this.
Yeah.
I'm serious, I had two goals. Three goals. Pick good songs, respect the spirit of Christmas, but also make it sound like you'd like to hear it, like mm-hmm. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
I figured it'd be enough people that liked my stuff that would go, yeah, I like what he's doing there. So that was where that comes from.
Yeah.
And what's cool about the Christmas album is it gets played every year around this time, and it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. The other project that you've been involved in recent years is the connection, brings us to the connection to White Hart. You've been working with Billy Smiley in the Union of Sinners and Saints. And I've heard that mm-hmm. album too, and I quite enjoy that. I found it interesting that you did one Petra song, one White Hart song, and then obviously a series of original songs. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that I haven't had the chance to see you guys live down here in Australia. You haven't done that tour, but I've heard that the concerts are often sort of a bit of a tribute, telling stories of both the White Hart years and the Petra years. How did this project come about? How did you and Billy Smiley come to bring this band together and do this idea?
Billy is a go-getter, and I was actually featuring, I was at a conference featuring my Christmas record, and he was there at a booth next to me featuring one of his artists. He has a record company. He's always in the studio doing that. And he says, "Hey, John, what's up? Hey, Billy, what's going on? You haven't been seeing each other since our tour a long time ago." And he says, "You know, we need to get together and write." And in Nashville, that's like saying, "Yeah, hi, how you doing?" It's just, "Yeah, sure, yeah." And I'm going, and he gave me his number, and I threw it away. And I gave him my number. I figured he'd throw it away. That's how it's done. But he called me and said, "John, I'm here at the studio. I got some time. Why don't you come over? Let's sit down and write." And I said, "Oh, okay. All right." So I went to the studio. It was a nice studio. We started, and we ended up writing a song. And it was a good, in fact, one of the songs, I can't tell you which one, but one of the songs off of the Union of Sinners and Saints album. And it was actually, it was like, wow, this sounds pretty good. And so we made a habit of doing it more. And at the time, it was just us writing. We there was no band planned or anything. And finally, we had about 8, 9, 10 songs. We're going, you know, this should be an album. And so we could, well, maybe we should have a band. And so we started doing that. And so we put out an album, created a band, and being spoiled that we are, we had to have the best, and had a great band. And it was fun. We recorded the record and seriously had three guys from White Hart, Jonathan, the guitar player, Anthony, the bass player, and Billy, then me as the singer for Petra. Then we had Jason Fowler, who was an amazing solo artist. If you haven't heard him yet, you will. And then Jonathan Crone, who is a producer, engineer, young genius. And he was, he engineered the album. We brought him in, and all of a sudden that was the band. And it was amazing. That band was actually too expensive to tour. It just, they just wanted too much money, and we were nobodies. And, you know, why pay them out? We had paid just to pay the guys when they could get, you know, the flavor of the hour to come in and play for nothing because they got a song being played on the radio. And so we finally said, you know, Billy and I and Jason, we said, you know, maybe we should do an acoustic thing, just two acoustic guitars and tracks and the three of us singing. And then we can talk about the songs and call it Storyteller Tour. And that's what we ended up doing. We did about three or four shows with the full band. And then we've done one or two tours with the Storyteller Tour. And that's been a ball. And we have a new album coming out, which is the old album, but with four new songs on it, a medley and three new songs. And the medley is a combination of Petra and Whiteheart songs. And it was done live and it came across so well that I don't know if we recorded it live or if we did it in the studio. It was just so good that we put that on our LP that was limited. So now the people that did the LP want a new CD with a new cover and the new songs we put out. So keep an eye out for that one. It's got several pretty cool new songs on it. So
awesome.
That's fantastic. And the medley is worth getting it, if nothing else.
That's fantastic. You shared you've got grandkids now. You're
a grandpa. Seven grandkids.
Seven. Yes.
Wow. Seven.
How old are they?
Well, my oldest, actually, I've got an honorary granddaughter that's hard to explain. She is out of college now. My grandson, my oldest, just went to college this year. My next grandson had his 16th birthday yesterday.
Wow.
My next two grandsons are both 15. Then I have a granddaughter who's 12, a granddaughter who's 7, and a granddaughter who's 4.
Oh wow, I've got two sons. My oldest is 15, so he's in that age group. I've started his journey of Christian music, and we started introducing him to things, because the greatest joy in my heart has been to see my sons come to know the Lord and want God to be a part of their life.
Praise God.
Your grandkids, does granddad John sit down with them and go, hey guys, listen to this. This is when I was younger. This is the albums get played to them.
No, but I tell you what, they got enough people around them that say, you're John Schlitz's granddaughter or grandson? Yeah. Oh man. The teachers will say, oh man, I love his record. Do you know that? And they'll come to me, my teacher knows you, thinks you're cool. I go, well, I don't know what to take it. And then they start seeing me on the internet and YouTube and Facebook. You know, they start seeing that and they go, you're famous, aren't you? I said, no, not really. Like, yeah, you are. And one of my grandsons into music. He's into music. He's into art. He is on every play in his school and could probably be a pretty good singer. And he's got me on his playlist, which is an honor. Whenever you're on your grandson's playlist, along with the rappers and the pop singers and all that, you should feel very honored. And I do. I haven't forced on my kids. I haven't forced on my grandkids. I would prefer they didn't get into music, to tell you the truth. And if they never know anything I did, that's fine, because God does. It's cool.
What is your heart for people who hear, whether it be your time with Petra, songs that you've done with Petra, whether they hear your solo projects or Two Guys with Petra or Union of Sinners and Saints, people who are listening to your music, what is it, or they're seeing you live, what is it that you are hoping God is doing in their life when they're hearing the songs that you've sung?
Well, I hope they're opening up their hearts to Christ. You know, the whole purpose of Christian music is to edify Jesus, and that's to let them see there's another way. If they're not Christians, they need to know there's another way than what they've been force-fed their whole life. There's another way. His name is Christ, and he's the only way. Now, I'm not going to force that only way on it, because that'll turn a lot of people off, but it's the truth. Through the blood of Christ, we are saved. And until we actually, if we accept him as Savior, then praise God, it's a new life for us. But you have to mean it and know it and know it in your heart and let the Holy Spirit guide you. And I'm hoping that as they listen to music, first of all, I hope they enjoy the music a lot. I hope they go, oh, I want to hear that again, because that's such a cool song. But as they listen to the song, I want them to realize there's a message there that could change lives.
If there's one song that you look back
don't
on.
Ask me what my favorite is.
Do you have a favorite song that you like to perform, that you've always enjoyed performing?
That I like to perform? Well, it'd probably be Beyond Belief. Yeah. It's so easy. I mean, that's one of those songs I don't think about. And there's enough cues I don't forget the words on that one. Too often. But that's really cool. I love He Came, He Saw, I Conquered. That's such a victorious song. Mm. I love No Doubt. That was an album that was total. It was so underrated. I think it's one of the best records we've ever done. And that song is one of the best songs we've ever done. Just Reach Out, of course, I'm very proud of. Now my solo stuff, oh my gosh. The Grafting, the song The Grafting is really important to me. I love singing that song. I love the title cut Go. I love that song. I love Feel It off of Go. And I love Fighting the Fight off of Go. And I love all the others too. I mean, Fake News is just fun. The Rhythm and Blues song, Where Will I Be? That's fun. I've never done it live though. And so, again, we could spend all day and I could tell you why I love every one of these songs.
Yeah.
I mean, Prayer, Creed, come on.
Finally, what's next for John Schlitt? I don't want to say what's left, but what's next for John Schlitt? Where do you feel God might be leading to you next? Because I said this to Bob, and you know this for sure. God never stops using us. You're never too old. And I'm not having a shot here that you're a little bit older than I, but you're never too old to be used by God. What's next for John Schlitt?
Whatever God has in store. There is no retirement in the Word. So as long as he allows me to have a voice, I'll sing if there's anyone interested. And what's cool here living in Nashville, I can sing on records. That's great. Or CDs or whatever is the mode at the time. I have a family. One of my responsibilities is to help them grow. That's major. I have a ministry called Build It Ministries that I'm ready and willing to be useful in that. I've got a thing called J Seculo Band, which is a joy. I mean, one of the best bands I've ever been part of, which is a fun time for me. So, and then I do woodworking. I'm busy. And as long as God allows me to be busy, then I'll be. I will tell you that I'm concerned about the fact that I haven't been in front of people and I haven't been ministering the way I have in the past, but I sure like my life right now, so I almost feel like it's selfish, but so I'm doing my best to be available. That's it. What's next? Whatever God wants.
Yeah.
And I'm like the song says, I am available. I am available. That's where it's at.
Yeah. Well, John, thank you so much for giving up your time tonight for you. It's been an honor to share this journey, to look back at your time with Petra and your career and your love for God. And what I love, I think, as I said before, the big thing that comes out when I've seen you perform both live and on video, when I hear your songs, but even just talking to you now, your love for God, your heart for God just shines through in everything that you do. And it's so great to see that you have that deep love for God and you just enjoy serving him and honoring him and the work that he's done in your life. I want to thank you on behalf of all your fans, all the listeners who listen to this, for everything that you have done, for the songs that you've sung and for the role that you've played in the ministry of Petra. It's been such an honor and such a privilege to speak to you today.
Thank you, David. You've been a real joy. I hope that my babbling won't get in the way of the plans you have. I think, yeah, please use it for it all it's worth. And let's pray that God knows exactly what he's doing, which he does, and he will use it in mighty ways.
Thank you. And thank you so much. And everyone who's joined us listening today, we hope that you've enjoyed hearing John and hearing some of these stories and more importantly, hearing his heart for God. So we really thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can catch us on Facebook, On Rock, A Petrospective, our Facebook page. You can email us on wemeanrock@gmail.com. And I encourage you to listen back to all our past podcasts. But more importantly, you can also catch John. John's you've got a website, John. Where can people? Is it www.johnschlitt.com or .org?
JohnWSchlitt.com.
JohnWSchlitt.com. So I encourage everyone, jump on John's website, jump on his Facebook links. Throw him messages. I'm sure he'd love to hear from everyone who enjoys his music. But thank you again, John. On behalf of On Rock, A Petrospective, I'm David Hall. That was John Schlitt, and we thank you again. Have a great time.